At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Labor Day sale and get 35% off paints and stains August 22nd through September 4th. With prices starting at $31.84, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Julie could part exchange her car. Or check out We Buy Any Car. She could be unsure if she got a good deal part exchanging. Or have cash in the bank with more bargaining power to get a bigger car for her five-a-side team. Totally played. Or total player. To get a quote in 30 seconds, enter your reg number now at webuyanycar.com.
True Crimers, welcome to Break the Case. I'm your host. I'm Jen Coffendaffer. We are going to get right after it here. There's been some new information that has come out for those of you who watch the case closely of Sebastian Rogers. You might already know at least what we're going to delve into, but we're not only going to dive into it, we're going to talk about what that means for the case, what that means for what could have happened. And I think it's very significant, and actually I think it's pretty concerning, but we're going to get right into it. First of all, for those of you who are new to the channel, Sebastian Rogers was a 15-year-old young man. He is now 16 years old. He disappeared on February 25th from Hendersonville, Tennessee. He was seen at a restaurant with his mother, and was also, the audio of his voice was caught on a dash cam video. So it was believed that he arrived at his mother's house in Hendersonville after basically an extremely full and exciting day for any young man, a day of homemade pancakes by mom, which was apparently unusual, a day of arcades, a day of restaurants and steaks and good food and popcorn, which Sebastian liked. Sebastian was on the autistic spectrum, although extremely high functioning. He has not been seen since. Key there. So I first want to get into the new information that, as I said, for those who followed this case closely, you might be aware of this. I'm going to read this. This is specifically an email communication. And the importance of this email communication is who this communication is from. Is this communication factual and true? Yes, I believe it is factual and true. What was written is this. As far as the flyer, that's a TBIPIO question, Tennessee Bureau of Investigation, their public information officer. That's what that acronym stands for. But I'll say the last seen date and the date when it was reported date may have gotten mixed up in the beginning and just has never been changed. From Detective Brandon Carter, the lead detective, Sumner County Sheriff's Office, CID, Criminal Investigative Division. This is a huge problem, in my opinion. It's a huge problem because that information, as we've discussed on multiple lives and has been discussed on multiple lives of other creators, that completely conflicts with what is on the FBI's flyer, what is on TBI's flyer, what is on the Sumner County flyer, what is on all these law enforcement communications that have been sent out. When did it get altered, I think is very important. So we're going to discuss that. Initially, we talked about how the very first the first communication in terms of an alert, like an Amber Alert versus an endangered alert, we discussed those differences, which are very profound in the law enforcement community. The endangered child alert, and I'm going to read it. We need your help to find Sebastian Wayne Drake Rogers, who is missing from the beach area in Hendersonville. The 15-year-old is 5'5", 120, with dirty blonde hair, last seen wearing a black sweatshirt, black sweatpants, unknown shoes. Not barefoot, they say, unknown shoes. Sebastian was last seen on 225 and may be in the area of Beach and Shackle Island near Long Hollow Pike. Call Sumner County Sheriff's Office at 615-451-3838 with information on his whereabouts. So that was the first information sort of publicly released from law enforcement in the form of a flyer. His picture is given. And it, again, it was endangered. An endangered or missing person typically happens when a person is, of course, a minor. Something like that might come out also when a person obviously has autism or is on the spectrum, because that puts them in danger. But that does not give any indication when you see an endangered person. That does not give indication of abduction or foul play. We know that then the next day, that information was upgraded to an Amber Alert. And Amber Alerts, by definition, indicate abduction or being taken. So this was a significant change and adjustment in alert, as we've discussed before. Also, what changed was the fact that the 26th was now written, which I think would lead anyone reasonably to believe that something was seen or discovered by law enforcement that made them adjust the date. Moreover, when asked, law enforcement was asked, why? They said their response was, there was new information that had been discovered through investigation. I'm paraphrasing. We've gone over, I've verbatim said what the words were, but that was essentially the paraphrased version of what law enforcement said, why the alert was changed from an endangered person to an Amber Alert. Now, this information that I just read you, to me, is very critical. What it's really saying is that there's been a mistake, oops. And you'll have to really talk to TBI about that, because it's sort of their mistake. That's what's being said here. That's in a nutshell what is being said. When you have a case like this, when you have any missing persons case, you really should know their last known sighting. And you clearly should make that sighting evident and obvious to the public so they can lend their assistance. There's a big difference between somebody going missing on the 25th and there being a sighting on the 26th, if indeed there even was one, which I've gone over this information before previously, where we lined out all the information. I have copious notes. We went through these notes in a previous live where I went through date after date after date, and the law enforcement communication that was given to the public on each of those dates. And in each of those discussions, there were a couple points. One point was, and again, this to me is just how law enforcement, when we talk, we sort of split the baby. We say, no obvious signs of foul play, or no signs of foul play. We don't know if there's any foul play, but nobody's off the table. Nothing's off the table. So that's law enforcement speech for they are not saying. But to look at the actions of the upgrade to an Amber Alert, they are saying. So, was this just a clerical error? And I have to say, there were several people both in the live chat here on YouTube, as well as on X, on my Twitter page, that said, Jen, what if it's just a clerical error? What if they're confusing the 25th to the 26th, because the 25th was last seen, but he was really reported the morning of the 26th by Katie and by Chris Proudfoot, the stepfather. What if that's the just kind of miscommunication, really, the date of report versus the date he went missing? And I remember responding to that saying, this is too critical of a detail to just get wrong, or to have a clerical error about, or to not specify. When you say last seen, which is what is said in those flyers on the 26th, that to me is a very specific detail that's extremely important. I mean, who wouldn't think that that's critical? What's funny is, I remember this happening actually in the Idaho 4 case. I'm not going to digress too much, but I remember when one of the Kaylee Gonzalez's sister, I believe, had gone through all the text messaging, and law enforcement had particularly said that text messages ended at a particular time. And Kaylee Consalvis's sister knew that that was incorrect. She said, no, it ended at this time. And I remember specifically on News Nation being asked, is that important? And my answer was, yes, it's important. Minutes are important. Hours are important. And certainly dates are important. Distinguishing between the 25th and the 26th. And we're going to talk about really why it's really important in this case. It's important in every case. But it's important with all we know now about this case. So I'm quite frankly, my jaw had to lift it off the ground when I read this email. And then trust me, I checked my traps. That's what I've been doing. And I'm so sorry to run late. I know I'm always very, very punctual. I know I was a few minutes late because I was reaching out to a lot of different people. And throughout the day, and checking my traps, we call it in the FBI, checking our sources, checking our information, double checking my notes, double checking interviews that were given, double listening to video responses in the media and so forth. And this is so wrong. If TBI truly just sort of change the date without actually seeing Sebastian Rogers and confirming it was Sebastian Rogers, and really our last known true sighting of Sebastian Rogers at the Texas Roadhouse, which we've all seen that video. Anyone following this case knows we have proof of life definitely at the Texas Roadhouse. We've seen it with our own eyes. We've gleaned from it lots of peculiar behavior. This is my opinion based on my experience, my law enforcement lens. It's not peculiar for a teenager and a mother to go to eat and have that teenager locked on their cell phone the entire meal. That's not unusual. You know, that's when you say, hey, get off the cell phone, communicate. We're at a nice dinner. Stop it. Put it down. Right? That it's pretty normal. I see it all the time. Walk into any restaurant and you'll see the teenagers on their devices. You seldom see a parent one-on-one with their child hooked to their device. We saw that. We also saw two parent photos being taken. Not unusual if the person's doing something unique, not unusual if it's a celebration, not unusual if you have all this interaction, you're like, hey, give me a smile, I suppose. Not unusual, right? This just seemed out of place to me. This is just my opinion. Just my opinion from observing the interaction. I've already talked about the eating. I've had probably, I don't know, a dozen or so people say, Jen, that's how teenagers eat. That's how teenagers eat. Listen, I have boys and I have teenage boys and another boy who's a little bit older than a teen now. I understand having a house full of their friends. I understand how kids can eat. That's taking it out of context from Sebastian Rogers and medicated versus not medicated. How did he eat? What were his mannerisms? So I was talking about in collaboration with what we know about Sebastian Rogers' habits of eating and how medication can change that and how we saw him eating at the Texas Roadhouse. I also talked about the temperature issues at the Texas Roadhouse, meaning was it freezing outside? No, freezing meaning in the 30s. It wasn't in the 30s. It was in 50s, 60s in Hendersonville at that time, approximately, but still chilly. No matter where you're from, that's a little chilly. Maybe not for everybody, but look at the people that were on that video in coats. You know, bundled up a bit. He had on a short sleeve shirt. He held his hands in his pockets. And again, part of that are his mannerisms to a degree. But remember, part of the time he also had his hands in his ears. You know, was that music? Was that one of the Texas Roadhouses that perhaps has some exterior music? But no matter what, when I see that, It's a comfort. You know, he's trying to get himself comfortable, whether that's blocking out sound, whether that's holding his ears for comfort, that then later we see him and he has his hands in his pockets clutched closely. Is that, again, it's comfort. But is that because he's cold? Is it a combination between cold and just comforting himself with his hands closely into the body? That tape gave us a lot. It gave us his gait, which really had not been discussed before, which is very important. If you're looking for somebody who's missing, you want to understand mannerisms, that they would even put their hands in their ears, that they put their hands in their pocket, that they walk on their tiptoes, that they're a little pigeon-toed. These are critical clues, and we were able to glean a lot of that. But not to digress beyond those observations, I just want to say we have proof of life. He was alive on the 25th that evening. We know, and it's been confirmed, there was an audio dash cam that Katie Proudfoot had. So we believe there's dash cam audio proof of his arrival back at Hendersonville at his home and also of him taking the trash out. And we believe that's been reinforced even though, you cannot make out the body or the person. I don't think it's possible from the video footage, from how it has been explained, that you can 100% say it's Sebastian, but it's believed to be Sebastian. My only point being, by the evidence we have, he made it home. So where does this leave us now? That now more than ever, I believe proof of life is on the 25th, not on the 26th. I had said that for a very long time, But in judging from all of the posters and information from law enforcement, when you put out there the 26th, we have to believe either you're idiots and did not appropriately say in your poster that that was when he was reported missing, not that that's the last time he's been seen. You're misleading the public, or that he's truly was seen the 26th, right? There's only three choices. You made a clerical error on a missing case involving an autistic child that you chose to never rectify. You actually saw the child on the 26th via video, or you have a witness that you've interviewed that actually puts him alive and well on the 26th, proof of life on the 26th. Or you have a situation where truly the only proof of life is the 25th, not the 26th, and you've purposefully misled for people to believe it's the 26th for investigative reasons or other reasons, you know, maybe to keep the person or persons that you're interested in, you know, not calling into question the 26th. So from a law enforcement vantage point, I've always said law enforcement has to have something showing him alive the 26th. There's just no other excuse, explanation for saying anything other than that. You just can't. But now I see from the lead detective these words. And I'm dumbfounded. The last seen in quotes date, and when it was reported date, may have gotten mixed up and just not changed. I don't know. That's the lead detective, so I have to go with him. He's blaming it on TBI. It is what it is. So now, at least for purposes of future discussions, it's the 25th that we have true proof of life. We have no other information within the public realm. And again, law enforcement has everything. No public information in the public realm that Sebastian was ever seen. In fact, we have information to the contrary, because we've been told over and over by law enforcement, he was never seen. He's not been seen. Not seen since he went missing. Not on camera, not anywhere. All right. So at least I think we know what happened, seemingly. Seemingly clerical error made by TBI, never changed by any of the agencies. And I tell you, if that really ferrets out, that is a crying shame. All right. So I want to go through the three possibilities, the only three possibilities in terms of Sebastian Rogers. Only three. Number one, he walked away. What proof do we have that he walked away? Well, when we say proof, remember what proof is. What proof is are witness statements, video, observations or voices heard or on video, possible locks that could show, that could prove to be proof, a proof regarding sometimes is in the form of digital recording, in other words, from a cell phone or from a computer or something like that. Footprints, dogs tracking, all of this can be proof. I'm just saying all of this, generally speaking, is proof. So now when I talk about the proof, you know, we can put it in one of those categories. So we have a statement given by Katie Proudfoot. He just walked away. I last heard from him at about 10 o'clock at night when I, you know, first not mentioned, then it was a noise, and then it was a thud, a loud thud. Okay, so That's the last we know from Katie Proudfoot. So she says that he was alive at that time, according to Katie Proudfoot. But again, that's a witness, and that is considered evidence. Whether it's, you know, fact, truthful evidence, it's nevertheless evidence. Okay? It's a fact that she's saying that. So if we take that on its face at a fact, and then also she's given a fact in terms of timeline that she went to bed around midnight. Well, recall, she says he disappeared sometime between midnight and six after she, you know, got off the couch, went to bed. That she just wouldn't have heard him and the dogs wouldn't have barked and there would have been absolutely no indication for her to hear her son leave midnight to six. So that is, I mean, as far as walking away, we're going through the witness statements, the evidence we have. That's number one. Number two, Chris Proudfoot says the same thing. Okay, so now we have two witness statements. Now remember, he purportedly was not there. But I do want to call your attention to Smiley's Story World. It's a YouTube channel. And she was able to interview Chris Proudfoot. And during that conversation, and you can look back at it, it's marked at, it's the interview of him at timestamp 29:15. And he says, we would have heard something. Now, before everybody completely jumps off the page, he could have just sort of been generalizing. You know, because again, he likes to speak for Katie and what happened that night. And he loves to take over the conversation with his narrative. And this was another example of that. He purportedly was not there. And we don't know whether he was there or not. Only law enforcement knows. We do not know that answer. We only know what law enforcement says, because again, our only witnesses in this are Katie Proudfoot and Chris Proudfoot that we know. Law enforcement is going to have a lot more than that. They're going to have digital information, car information. They're going to have camera information on the roads. They're going to have information from his workplace. They're going to have a lot of information that is unknown to us. So law enforcement holds a lot of the keys, and we know very little. But he does say this. And believe me, if it is found out that anything nefarious happened, and if it is found out that Chris Proudfoot was somehow there, if that ferrets out to be true, and I'm not saying it is, I'm just saying if that ferrets out, this Smiley's World, and I want to make sure to give her credit, Smiley's Story World, believe me, they will be using that clip. Because he says, and I think I wrote it in quotes, we would have heard something, referring to if he would have left through a window. We would have heard something. So this is one of two things. He either had a major slip up, he was there and had a major slip up, or he wasn't there and he merely is kind of saying, generally speaking, you know how you say we and you and things like that? It would have been a general speaking situation. So one of the two. Those are our only options. There's no other option. Screw up, he was there, and he admitted it there when he said we, or generally speaking, we would have heard something like that. So I think we have to be careful not to jump off the page, but merely to take into account those two possibilities when you take in everything else we know. Okay. So again, KT witness statement, he disappeared between noon and six. CP says this too, although he's really not a direct individual who was there. But nevertheless, he is a witness, can testify to what Katie told him. He can testify to what she said on the phone. He can testify to things like that. So he certainly, in this, if there is foul play found, he certainly is going to be a witness as to what happened that night from what he heard on the phone. He can testify to that. He can't testify hearsay words, but he could certainly testify to, calling 911 and the order of events, receiving a call, so on. He can totally testify to all of that. So I'm just talking about, we're talking about walking away now. And again, what law enforcement does is very simply, when they have sets of facts, they go through process of elimination. What the facts lead to, what they don't lead to, and what you can start to eliminate as a possibility. So that's what we're kind of going through here. L.E. said, no indication of foul play. Again, going back to Sebastian walked out of that house and has never been seen again. So now we have Chris saying it, Katie saying it, and we have L.E. saying, listen, no indication of foul play. We've heard that several times from law enforcement. Add on to that, I used to be able to add on to the list of him just walking away that, and sorry about my eye, I actually got hit full on force about 7 feet away with one of the hardest forehand tennis players that plays in our league. I think I've got it covered up with makeup, but I got hit square right here. And my eye will not stop watering. So I apologize about that. But anyway, the bottom line is I can't say what I used to say, which was on the 26th of February, there was information from law enforcement that that was his last sighting. I could add that into this to say, see, he could have walked away, because law enforcement saw him on a video or something, even though it was always an oxymoron. We've never seen him since he left, but last seen on the 26th, I think we figured that out now. So I have to take that off the page of proof that he walked away. Now, it's important, I think, it's very important to look at other autistic children who walked away in this general range of age and their circumstances. So I want to quickly discuss three cases, super quickly. The first one you've heard me talk about many times, Connor Jack Oswalt. Connor Jack Oswalt disappeared in 2019. He was 16 years old, so only 1 year older than Sebastian Rogers. He disappeared from California, and guess where he was found? In Utah. Hundreds of miles away from where he disappeared. He was found almost 3 years later. Homeless, freezing, at a gas station, not in good health. The difference, I think, with Connor Jack Oswalt, is there were various sightings throughout the time he was gone, as you can imagine. In fact, he was actually arrested in Nevada, although it's unclear to me that there was really any nexus made, even though he gave the name Connor Jack and gave the name Connor Oswalt, but they wrote it with a D, not a T. And unfortunately, I don't believe that nexus was ever made until later. But my point is that this individual left, the case went completely cold until he was observed freezing cold at a gas station. And his parents were called. And of course, by this point, he wasn't a minor anymore. He was 19 years old. And he was taken to a hospital. And he didn't want to go back home. In fact, services were called to assist with him. And as far as I know, he was assisted with somehow getting a place and things like this. So we have to consider Connor Jack Oswald's case. I think it's very interesting. Number two, the case of Marcus Tessier. Marcus Tessier was 13 years old. He disappeared at 4 in the morning. He disappeared from Tucson, Arizona. He was found approximately a day later, not very long later. It was over a day, though, or about a day. I'm sorry, about a day. But he was found in Deming, New Mexico. He was found in Deming, New Mexico. And just 200 miles away from Tucson. I looked it up. It might even be a little bit further than 200 miles. Hours away. To this day, they do not know how he got there. He was found in a Walmart. He had some things he wanted to buy, and he didn't have any money, but he went to go buy it, right? He was, again, autistic on the spectrum. And fortunately, he got home and is taken care of there. But again, a case where somebody left, was missing. It was a shorter amount of time because he went to a public place like a Walmart, just like what happened with Connor Jack. He was in a public place, this gas station where he was seen, very visible. And so they were found. The last one I want to talk about is Bradley Close. And I featured all of these on my Twitter in talking with Sebastian, but I haven't really gone into a lot of detail here. And I just wanted to do that because we're discussing what if he walked away. And Bradley Close went missing in Phoenix, again, autistic. He was very high functioning. He had a job, but he left his job and was never seen again. He actually left his cell phone. I believe he left his keys, as I recall. He left personal items at his place of work and just walked away and disappeared. He was not found for 5 months. He ended up being found in the foothill area of Phoenix, and he was deceased. You can imagine, I mean, his family was so upset. And again, these are three instances of huge law enforcement response, huge search responses, the community coming together, posters and, you know, flyers, word of mouth. Connor Jack Oswald, his mom was devastated, you know, was every day, according to her, every single day, she walked and searched for him. So these cases... I forgot to give you his age. He was 16 years old, so just a year older than Sebastian. So again, in these cases, we have autistic teenagers who literally walked away, never to be seen again, until one was found deceased, one was found in a Walmart, and one was found near a gas station, varying amounts of time. So if you ask me, is it possible? Is it possible that Sebastian Wayne Drake Rogers just walked away, never to be seen again after almost a year? I would say it's possible and extremely improbable. When you look at other cases of autistic teenagers, they are typically found in this age range. Yes, are there some outliers like Connor Jack Oswald? Sure, there are some outliers, but it's rare for us to be abutting against a year and no one to see him. No one. Again, unique gait, things he did when he was uncomfortable.
Mickey could try to sell his car privately. Or get it sold today with We Buy Any Car. He could spend days on end trying to sell to a bunch of time wasters. Or sell in a flash and head to the fun fair with the kids. Proper gutted. Or proper impressed. To get a quote in 30 seconds, enter your reg number now at webuyanycar.com.
Disappearing purportedly in a black sweatshirt and sweatpants, no shoes. All of these people had shoes, by the way. All of them had shoes. None of them disappeared without their shoes on. So I just put this in the consideration of, did he walk away? Now, number two, hypothesis number two, he was abducted by someone other than family. Okay? He was abducted by someone other than family. This is something law enforcement is going to be considering. Why do I think that this is more probable than number one? Well, it's more probable than number one because of several items. Number one, the Amber Alert being issued by law enforcement. That's number one. Number two, the flashlight video. The flashlight video, which we've completely debunked as not being trash lights. As I said, when I spoke about this before, I really challenge each of you, please don't listen to me or listen to other creators or listen to anyone. Look with your own eyes. You can figure in what other people with law enforcement background have said, and then, you know, figure in what Nick Barris, who has his entire credibility on the line, you know, when he talks about it and talks about person one and person two and their movement and shows that, you know, consider all these things, but look at your own eyes or have your own eyes. It tells a story. And the story isn't somebody else taking out the trash because it's the wrong house that hypothesis was about. So you can clearly see where this is in the area outside of Sebastian Rogers' house in that clearing area. So take a look at that. You can see bushes obstruct some of the light and see what you think. And in terms of the 3 a.m., I just want to get down and dirty on that really quick. We know the counter was stopped. We know it was stopped from, I believe, 2 days earlier at about 3:11 a.m. That's when the counter stopped. But we know Nick Barris said it was at 3 a.m. I believe he gleaned that from his conversation with the homeowner who provided that video when they backtracked the garbage. Yes, I understand that Steve Fisher, who works for the Proudfoots, who's been paid at least $15,000, has said that that was somebody using a light to take out the trash, and that would only account for one of the two lights, and that he backtracked the time with the homeowner, and that supposedly it was more like 5 in the morning. Okay? So, you know, yes, we can consider what each person said, but as I said, consider motive, consider reputation, consider Nick Barris and him coming out and saying that 3 o'clock time frame. Consider what it looked like. Even though it was a waning gibbous, it was at about a 98% full moon. You can go back and look at this. It's very easy to research, which basically means there was light, but it doesn't mean it was fully lit up that night. So yes, there was some light, but it was not fully lit because there were no street lights. They don't have light pollution there. And according to Katie Proudfoot, if we're to believe her, all she had were her little solar lights in her garden, which if they're like my solar lights, which I have everywhere, that solar lasts about halfway through the night and then goes dim and gets dimmer and dimmer. No floodlights were on. There were two other lights that were on, according to Chris Proudfoot, because recall in this interview, Katie answers the question. And then Chris says, wait a minute, Katie, you're forgetting these two lights on the side of the house that actually were on, which I always found very interesting. But in the area where these two lights were, you can see it's extremely dark. So challenge you to take a look at that. And again, that's what points to there being some abduction. Plus, law enforcement said investigation has led us to upgrade this to an Amber Alert. Okay. Evidence point number two for it being, I'll call it stranger abduction. Some of these are going to meld into the third category, but lack of sightings. Lack of sightings of Sebastian Rogers indicate that he is not walking around somewhere, right? He hasn't been seen by anyone. This is Hendersonville. Almost everybody had a camera, except interestingly, the Proudfoots, even though she works for Brinks, I believe. I always found that interesting. Nevertheless, there is definitely zero footage. According to law enforcement, he hasn't been seen. And that, of course, would lead one to believe an abduction, because that means you've been abducted and you are gone out of sight from public. Lack of, again, sightings by humans. And then number three, I had sightings by cameras, cell phones, anything else. Okay. All of those would lead one to believe he's been abducted and that that could be by a third party. I call attention to the case of Michael Vaughn. Michael Vaughn, who went missing. Some of you may remember this case. It was several years ago. And no one could figure out what happened. He literally, in the middle of the day, went missing. His mother was working, I believe, at an Albertsons. His father was home. But he went down the street, apparently, and by all indications of what law enforcement thinks is he was abducted by the Wanderers, who lived a couple of doors, several doors down, and that he was murdered. Many of us have heard the confession-like tape of Mr. Wanderer, who basically blames everything on his wife. And they're both incarcerated for other reasons right now, I think, by law enforcement, tries to figure out what in the world happened. There are two other individuals that may have been involved in that also. But basically, we're talking about a child that was abducted, but by somebody that lived close proximity. So there's a vehicle that the mob crew, who has done a fantastic job on this case, trying to truly develop facts. And he has talked a lot about a vehicle. Now, this vehicle is associated with the neighborhood, meaning it's either, we don't know exactly, but comes in and out from time to time, whatever that means. In other words, they don't live there, but they're associated with other people in the neighborhood. So they're supposedly known to go there. Now, this is from Steve Fisher. So take that for what it's worth. Steve Fisher says he knows exactly who that car belongs to, but he does not want people, what did he call it? He doesn't want people doxxed or otherwise followed, or I guess, you know, I find that all interesting. But I don't know whether to really believe him or not. I don't know. But my understanding is that the vehicles that were in that neighborhood are associated with that neighborhood because they have all the footage from the streets and from other cameras in the neighborhood. So what do I make of that car? We know there's an Uber car that's been excluded, but this car, I don't know. I don't know if it's important. I don't know if it's not, but I know it could be. All I have is Steve Fisher saying it's not important, and that isn't enough for me. Nevertheless, we also have to consider the final theory, right? Either A, he walked away. We went over possibilities on that. Possibilities of proof. I think we pretty much said that's going to be very unlikely, possible, but improbable based on the flashlight video, lack of sightings, lack of camera footage. So that it would seem, and of course, the most important piece, which is the Amber Alert. So let's move on to number three, the last one. Number three, and that is Sebastian Rogers was killed in the home or taken and killed later by someone associated with the home. Okay. What do we have that would point us in the direction of the parents being involved in either an abduction and kidnapping, murder, sequestration, gone, or abduction and murder, or murder and then moving the body? Okay, what do we have? Basically, to me, they're all sort of one and the same, other than one would mean Sebastian could possibly be someplace and be kept alive, and the other would mean he's gone, right? That none of us ever want to think about. But I just want to quickly go over option three and what evidence we have of that. So, of course, we have everything from option two, right? We have, oh, let me get this up here, Southern Girl. Hopefully I got that up in time. Oh, I didn't. I'm sorry. Thank you for the that $1.99. I really appreciate it. But not to digress here. Option number three, again, either an accidental death of Sebastian Rogers. In other words, medication, fell, hit his head, thump, or somehow accidentally died in that home and then was taken away, or abducted and hurt later. We have to consider this. Law enforcement is considering it. Everyone is considering this, right? There's only three options to consider, you know, and the one I'm not considering, despite the fact that UFOs are being talked about constantly in the news, is that a UFO took him. That's the only one I actually will not consider. But these three, we have to strongly consider. I say that tongue in cheek, because believe me, you wouldn't believe some of the DMs I get. I'm putting that on the table. I don't believe that. So flashlight video, lack of sightings, lack of camera sightings. And now I'm going to add in some things that could point to him being hurt in the house or abducted and hurt later or kept later. One, the landfill search. Law enforcement had to have probable cause to put together an affidavit to go on private property and conduct a landfill search, which is, I know they said that they just did it perfunctory, but in my belief, I've never seen anything like that. You have to have probable cause, which, yes, it's one of the lowest forms. It's actually not the lowest form. Reasonable suspicion can result in you being able to detain somebody for a short amount of time. We use reasonable suspicion. And then beyond that, which is usually a much higher standard, is probable cause. I say it's a much higher standard because the law enforcement officer has to write an affidavit to support their position. They have to work in conjunction with the district attorney who supports the position. And then they have to hold up their hand and swear with their credentials behind them, doing the right thing under penalty of perjury, that they're telling the truth before a judge, that they believe these facts would lead them to believe that either Sebastian Rogers or proof that something happened to Sebastian Rogers was in that landfill. Okay. So we have that to consider. And I should say that that also could go with the objection by a third party. I'm going to call it instead of a stranger, because I don't think it was a stranger, but could it have been somebody he met online, somebody from school, somebody that somehow he intersected with that lured him out of that house? So that's number two, third party culprit, called a third party culprit, not a stranger, third party culprit. But now we're on to number three again, which is basically somebody within that house, within his family. Okay. So again, we have to do the landfill. Now let's add on to this. Motive. Is there motive? Right? So when we consider the case of Bradley Close, Marcus Tessier and Connor Jack Oswalt. No motive. You know, family situation from everything I've read wasn't at issue. The motive situation wasn't there. In this situation, we have to at least consider motive. To me, the number one motive would be the fact that Sebastian Rogers was not wanted in that house. And I say that because Chris Proudfoot was trying to get custody of his daughter. And he did not want Sebastian Rogers around his daughter, period. That has been made clear. He says that when I saw his interview, they say, he says voluntarily, I'm not going to go into why. But Seth Rogers was purportedly going to take him. Remember, Seth was trying to get custody of him, he had custody. It was joint custody, but trying to have him live with them. So why would you need to cause harm to Sebastian Rogers when you know you're working toward him living with the father? There's no reason to do anything, to abduct him or to do anything if you know he's going there, right? So, but you complicate that with issues in custody battles that personally I've seen over and over again. Literally, people would rather, and I'm sorry, I don't think I got that one up there either. Many parents, quite frankly, would rather see, having trouble putting these up here, I'm sorry, would rather see anything happen other than their ex-spouse getting their child. It's really something. They would rather kill the child. They would rather run off to Mexico with the child. They would rather face kidnapping charges. This is something that happens all the time. The FBI is the main agency responsible for parental kidnappings. Kidnapping puts it right in the venue of the FBI. So, just dealt with this a lot. So it's all to say nothing surprises me. So even though it's makes a lot of sense to me that Sebastian was going to live with his father, which doesn't really mean that there would need to be a reason to hurt Sebastian at that time. It happens. The other thing is, and this falls in line a bit with motive, I think, and that is past behavior toward a child. It's very rare for an individual who has never had any intersection with child protective services or with any complaints of mistreatment, even whether it went all the way to CPS or was just reported out of school or reported by a friend or was witnessed or seen in some way by somebody. Typically, there's something. It doesn't immediately go from straight to an abduction or straight to a homicide, for heaven's sakes. A lot of times there's steps in between when it comes to abuse of a child. And I've been over it a lot. I've been over at least the two belt beatings. We've talked about other information that is out there regarding how he was treated by Chris Proudfoot, meaning Sebastian. So we know that there is information of not being treated correctly by Chris Proudfoot. So that's something, all I'm saying is we would have to consider. In other words, if this does turn out to be foul play, and if there were ever charges brought, all of this would come forward as evidence to support that. Everything to do with the motive and the background circumstantially regarding the treatment of Sebastian Rogers. So again, this is evidence going toward if this would end up to be the case. What other evidence is there? Well, they would take all these statements that have been made by Katie and Chris Proudfoot that have had incongruencies where something is said and then it's said differently or it's not said and then all of a sudden it's said, that's a problem. That's a real problem. So does it mean that they've done something? No. But what it means is if they have something, that is evidence that's going to be used against them. Anything they said where they contradicted themselves would then be used. You betcha that they will be combing through that, that law enforcement is now combing through that, all their different statements to show contradictory statements from what they've said. I mentioned already Chris Proudfoot saying, we would have heard something. I already mentioned that one. But they would be looking at so much more. One of the things that stuck out to me, and it doesn't necessarily, again, we're just going over possibilities and what the evidence would be. But it is unusual for parents who have a missing child not to immediately go to mainstream media, not to reach out to their local affiliates, and quite frankly, their local affiliates reaching out to them and them responding, right? So it's very typical for that to be one of the first things you do. One of the first things you do is you want to go out and you need to say, hey, listen, my child is missing. I'm begging you to put his face and name out there so that he can be seen. I've talked about the Petito Schmitz before. That's the first thing they did. They went straight to the media, mainstream media, because they wanted his face and name out there. So that is a typical response of what you see. I've always found it interesting that that wasn't the response of the Proudfoots. Does it mean they're guilty? No. But it's just another something that if they were ever found responsible, this is certainly something that would be brought up in court. It just would. I believe, you know, as a case agent, you when you're the summary witness at the end, sort of summarizing the whole entirety of the case, you bring in all these little details and you would say, based on your training and experience, this is something that is unusual in your normal, what you normally see. So you can bet that that would probably come in because it is unusual. Let me see. I've already talked about the misstatements. So in looking at this, those are the three options. Those are the three options. Have I completely ruled out option one? No, I haven't completely ruled it out. With what we have, it's very hard to completely rule that one out because it is possible that somehow they have a sighting, but it doesn't look that way. Where I think we're really leaning toward is this is a third-party culprit abduction, or this is a family abduction and or murder of Sebastian Rogers. I'm really so possible that he walked away. Yes, let's keep that as a possibility. But probabilities to me are moving toward a third-party culprit abduction.
Mickey could try to sell his car privately. Or get it sold today with We Buy Any Car. He could spend days on end trying to sell to a bunch of time wasters. Or sell in a flash and head to the fun fair with the kids. Proper gutted. Or proper impressed. To get a quote in 30 seconds, enter your reg number now at webuyanycar.com.
Or the parents. Now, many of you may ask, Jennifer, you haven't even mentioned Seth. You know, why are you not mentioning Seth? This is why I'm not mentioning Seth. And that is because you have to have means and opportunity. And in this case, the means and opportunity falls on the Proudfoots. And I say that because Katie Proudfoot was the one that was there. We know Seth Rogers was not there. Chris Proudfoot, we don't know where he was. We don't know where. We have the receipts on Seth. So for this reason, I don't think he had the means and opportunity. And I also don't think Seth Rogers had the motive. He was supposed to be getting his son. I don't think he had the motive. I think Seth Rogers loves his son from everything I've seen. I understand for those of you who might be saying, but Jen, have you read that there was a report made on him and that he hurt Sebastian? I'm aware of that. Who lodged that report? Katie Proudfoot. It's just a little bit harder for me to give it the weight that 5 CPS reports and Chris Proudfoot's own admissions about, in Tennessee, what would be considered child abuse and endangerment by hitting an autistic, and it's because he's autistic, child with a belt. You can't use a weapon. A belt is a weapon for punishment. Look at the statute. So it's these factors that I think need to be considered. I just wanted you to know why I haven't gone in that direction. And it took me a long time to really look at all of that. If you look back, you know, initially I said, if he ran away, why didn't he run away to Seth? You know, why didn't he run away to Seth? But I don't think he ran away, most likely. I think he was abducted either by somebody who's a third party, who we have no idea what that motive would be. That's where we get into trouble. What's the motive? Was it just to take advantage of him? What's the motive that sticks out? And believe me, I know that could happen. It's possible. But I don't know who has that motive. I know about the motive that I believe could exist with the Proudfoots. The other piece that I'm going to put up here is interesting, and that is a summary agent on the stand I would certainly bring up. And that is this whole last day that Sebastian Rogers went missing on the 25th. This unusual day of mom is making pancakes. Mom is taking him on a great, you know, fun day, a fun day, you know, and then to the steakhouse. It is a little odd. If it ended up being them, I would just say, this looks like it lined up to the last time I was going to be with my son. I say that not because I think that that is what happened. I say that because I think it's a possibility that you have to consider. And as law enforcement, you're considering all possibilities. So this the last time I'll go over it because I don't want to be redundant and I've kept you all way too long. Number one, he walked off on his own. I gave all the reasons that that could have happened. I think it's a possibility, although on the very low end. Number two, third party abduction. I'm going to combine that with abduction slash homicide slash, I should have mentioned this, accidental death and cover up by individuals in the home. So those all fall into much more probable. We have not heard from law enforcement in months since April, other than to say Green Hoodie wasn't involved. We haven't heard from them. If you look at news reports, when it came, like his birthday report from the media, they're just taking coverage from Craddock, who's the chief now. They're taking coverage from a long time ago, his statements. We don't know what law enforcement is thinking since the first part of April. May, June, July, we have months and months and months of investigation, of looking over reports, of trying to understand what happened during that time frame, meaning law enforcement's had all of that. So when you think about that, everyone, you know, where are they leaning? I think they're leaning toward two or three. They're leaning toward two or three. That's what I believe. And maybe for a little while. But we have to take them at their word. In April, they said, no signs of foul play, but no one's off the hook. Whatever that means. It's a normal cop speech. Everyone, thank you so much for coming in and tuning in. I feel like I've talked way too long. I really appreciate this. Is a $5 super chat. Is Rogers Homestead of Family Values really looking for groomers? You know, I don't know about that. For me, if it ends up that the Proudfoots are involved, if that's a big if, but if it ends up that way, it's going to be a simple fact of likely something happening and then a cover up. And then, you know, here we are. I'm not saying that happened. I'm just saying it's a possibility. Let me see, get to this last one from Jax Wolf, $5. Jennifer, talk about the coincidence in the February 26th date. Oh, yes, the motive. Very true. If this ended up being on the Proudfoot's hands, if they end up being at all involved in this, there is a huge coincidence with the date of the abduction disappearance of Sebastian Rogers. And that is the divorce occurring between Seth and Katie. So if I were on the stand, and again, I'm putting together all the Lego blocks of everything. And again, you would have to have much more proof than this. This would just be showing motive and things for the timing. I would say this was not at all coincidental. This was very much planned for this particular date because it's in your face. That's certainly something that would be brought up if indeed. So again, I'm not going out as a torchlighter saying anything other than I think Sebastian most likely that there is a third party. Thank you, Jax Wolf, that there's a third party culprit involved in this, or there is family involved in this. I think it's an abduction. I think there is foul play. And I'm strongly looking at the motives over and over again. And the reason now I think two and three are more probable than one is because, circling back to how we started, it's because law enforcement has said, check with TBI, it could be a clerical error from date last seen versus date reported last seen. So that's why, for me, the needle has shifted again from a walk away. If he walked away and he was seen on the 26th, oh my gosh, I completely would see why this is more of a walk away. But in hearing this, actually found out yesterday and then checked my traps today to make sure this was true. I'm so disappointed. And I'm sure you all too, for a lot of reasons, because now I don't have the hope I had that Sebastian Rogers was walking around on the 26th. I used to have that hope. That hope faded today. And I hope TBI, the FBI, and Sumner County, they don't need to tell us. They don't owe us anything in the public. But they sure should send out something and clarify that date and say, apologies, the date he was reported was the 26th, the date he was last seen, the 25th. I think that would be a very stand-up thing for law enforcement to do if it's factual. If it's not factual, I would hope they would come out and say, to reiterate, the last date seen proof of life is the 26th. But that's not what that email indicated. All right, everyone. Really appreciate y'all being here. And until the next time, may justice be served.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.